Good morning, this is Sally Richards, and this is the In the Garden show brought to you by UC Master Gardeners. And this is KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine, and the opinions and views expressed in this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. You can access our shows live or as podcasts by going online to KUCI.org. And this is In the Garden. We're here every Thursday morning from 8:30 to 9:30. And I'm with Chris Bonner this morning, and we're going to talk about spring gardening. We're going to be talking about planting seeds or from plants and get our gardens going. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Sally. How are you doing?
Well, we're doing fine this morning. This is the first day of spring. We're recording this in March, so we're just going to be getting most of our spring gardening gardens ready. And I want to tell people a little bit about Chris, because he's also a master gardener, and we actually were in the same master gardener class. And Chris has blossomed out into a whole nother area of the master gardeners. And Chris, you want to tell us about that? Because I know you're doing a lot of speaking about your gardening and different types of gardening that you're doing, and especially tomatoes, and we'll definitely be talking more about that as we get on. But so tell me what you've been doing.
So thanks, Sally. One of the reasons I joined Master Gardeners was because I love gardening and I love learning new things and I love public speaking. And so the Master Gardeners has a speakers bureau, and we do over 150 presentations every year. There's 30 or 40 Master Gardeners that are part of the speakers bureau. And what I want to do was to try to expand the offering to the public, to the gardening public in South Orange County. And so we've started a monthly gardening program, Smart Gardening Series, at the Norman Murray Center in Mission Viejo. And we get anywhere from 30 to 50 people. We just finished our 22nd month.
Wow.
And I did tomatoes, which is always a fun topic for me. We've also got a series down in San Juan Capistrano, and we have three different venues there. The first venue is Riata Park, and both the Murray Center and the San Juan Capistrano show up on the city websites as well as the Master Gardener website. You can just Google Orange County Master Gardeners and you'll find our calendar by following the links to that. Mm-hmm. And so Riata Park out on Ortega Highway, we do, I think it's the second Saturday of every month and it's on the calendar. We're doing raised bed vegetable gardeners the next month, but it varies every month. The other venue is the Senior Center down next to the junior high in San Juan Capistrano, and it's trying to gear topics that are senior friendly. And so we did a pumpkin succulent centerpiece workshop, hands-on workshop.
Ooh, that sounds fun.
We just did tomatoes for small spaces. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be doing herbs and creating herb containers coming up soon. And we're going to do something really exciting at the San Juan Capistrano Community Garden. We're going to do a What's Bugging My Plants, but we're actually going to do a walkthrough and help people and give kind of free consulting gardening advice on different pest problems and using integrated pest management. So trying to go chemical-free or least toxic type approach there. And so it's just been really fun to connect all the great master gardeners who have different specialties and making presentations to the public. It's just been just a wonderful experience for me.
And that's terrific. I've talked to a lot of people lately, and they're going, yeah, I want to put my garden in. I'm just getting started. I really don't know how to do it. And these talks are free, and they're there and they're available for you, and you can learn how to do it. And like, we're inspired. We love to garden, and we love to pass on information about gardening to anyone that wants to hear it.
And there's garden clubs, Mission Viejo Garden Club, the Coto mm-hmm. de Casa Garden Club, down in Rancho Mission Viejo. They have farms, Sedero Farms and some other ones, the local community gardens.
Oh, wow.
And so we also give talks there occasionally.
Oh, that's nice. That's terrific. Okay, well, that'll give us a good start. And that's what we're going to be talking about here. So if you have more questions, you can go to one of those talks and talk to Chris and get more information, or some of the other master gardeners that are going to be out there. So when I get out to my garden, I go out there now, and one of the first things I do is I look around and I go, oh my gosh, look at all this dead stuff laying out there. What do I do? How do I get my garden ready? So what do you recommend, Chris?
Well, we recommend in this time period now, so January, February primarily, but into March too, the first thing is just to do a cleanup. You shouldn't be buying plants and seeds, well, you have to buy seeds ahead of time, but plants and stuff, you want to have a place for them to put in the ground as soon as you bring them home. And so what I like to do, what we recommend, is a major garden cleanup in the January through the beginning of March timeframe, just so you can see what you've got. And that's really kind of the key thing, is the above ground, getting rid of dead plants, getting rid of weeds. And then it's time for soil. And again, I'm really into soils. And again, you can fool the neighbors and a lot of things, but you can't fool the plants. The plants know whether or not you're taking care of the soil. And what I do for all of my annual beds, and it can be annual flowers or annual vegetables, is you need to love your soil. And the best way to love it is by adding decomposed organic, which we call compost. And so you want it every year, every season. I'm turning the soil, I'm adding compost, and this last year has really been a bad problem for soil grubs. And so they look kind of like these little alien insects, and and they eat roots. They love to eat roots. Oh. And so as you're turning your soil, if you see pests like that, garden worms, we want to encourage, of course, but these things, you'll recognize them. They look evil. They look wrong. And so you want to pull those, and I like to pull and squish them.
Oh.
Their blood is black, and I like to squirt it. So I'm just a big kid.
And you, a lot of mine are the white, so I can definitely tell them the difference between a worm and a grub. They curl up, and they're not good to be there. But also, when we have leaves and things on the ground, they're carrying viruses from last year. And right. If they're still sitting there when you go to plant the new stuff, those can be carried back into the ground, and you want to get those out of there.
The other important thing to remember when you're loving your soil, when you're adding it, if you incorporate undecomposed organic, and a lot of the bagged soil mixes that you find, if you see that the first product is forest products, basically they've taken trees and tree limbs and they've run them through a chipper.
Yep.
And again, that's fine. That makes great mulch to put on top of the soil. You can incorporate it in the soil, but just recognize that the bigger pieces that you see are going to take time to decompose. And during that decomposition process, it actually needs nitrogen to decompose.
Yeah.
And so you actually could love your soil to death by adding in too much undecomposed organic material. And you might say, well, gee, I added all this organic. Why are my vegetables not doing well? Well, if it's too much organic or not fine enough or small enough, or you're not fertilizing enough, you can end up nutrient deficient just because that organic is in the process of decomposing.
Yeah, and they just suck up the nitrogen to decompose. And that's one of the major things you need for your plants to grow. The other thing that I found, and I learned the hard way, is I did get that big chunky stuff and I thought, oh good, that'll be great. Well, it actually went right into the soil and all the roots started to go around it. Have you ever tried to dig through that stuff?
Oh, what a mess.
Yeah, it's terrible. Yeah. And so I learned that was not the way to do it. So if you can get a hold of good compost or make your own, and you can do vermiculture with worms too, that makes a great
amendment to the soil.
Right, yeah. And it's easy to do and it's fun. Kids love to do that too.
Another common question I get when we teach these classes is about clay soils. And again, a lot of parts of Orange County that are in the hills, especially, not so much the flat parts of Orange County because they've got good alluvial soils, but the people that live on hills, like a lot of places in Orange County, there's a natural clay layer to it. And people say, well, can I do something to change the clay soil? And the simple answer is no. So silt, sand, and clay, it's the same parent material, just different size particles. And it takes literally hundreds of thousands of years to decompose from the biggest particles are sand, the medium are silt, and the smallest are clay. And you really can't change that. You can amend it and change the proportion of how much clay is in your soil. But if you have a clay soil problem, the easiest way to deal with it is to go with raised beds on top of the soil or to go with containers, and then you don't really have a soil problem. Vegetables do like friable, loose soil because you need not just soil to grow, but you also need air to grow. And so roots are a living part of the plant, and they respire, and they need to have air, they need to have oxygen to be able to be healthy to do their job.
And that was one of the big things that I learned when I was taking the classes for a Master Gardener. I thought, well, if I put air, they're going to dry out, but that's not true. You can actually drown your plants by not having air at the root level.
The classic loam soil is one equal parts silt, sand, and clay for 45%, 25% water, 25% air, and then 5% organic. That is the scientific definition of a loamy soil.
And that's what we'd all love to have. The other thing is, too, if you have a clay soil and you want to put things into the ground, just remember that when you dig that hole and it's all clay around there, even though you put all new soil in there, now all you have is an underground clay pot. And so the water doesn't go through all that clay, and you can build up water, and your plants can still drown in that because the clay doesn't dissipate the water as quickly as it needs to.
That's absolutely right. And basically, you're drowning your plants, or you're suffocating your plants because now there's no air.
Yeah, and they start to look wilty and stuff, and gee, I need to give them more water, and that just...
So it's hard for us gardeners. We want to plant right away. And the best advice I heard in the Master Gardener class was just slow down. Dig your hole and fill it with water. And you have to wait until it drains. And if you have a clay soil, you might have to wait a day or two. Yeah. And that is a signal back to you that says, maybe I need to think about what I'm doing here.
Yeah. So we're in March right now. And so even though I grew up in the Midwest, as people that have heard my show before know, I always talk about that. But we obviously are in March, and we can't plant anything in March. We have to wait until June. But because we're in Southern California now, we can plant a lot of stuff. And even we'll talk about tomatoes later, but I found out that you can even grow winter tomatoes in the winter here. And there are a lot of things that we can start at this time of year, even though the weather is a little cooler than we'd like it to be. It's actually really good for a lot of spring plants. And I usually start mine from seed, but there's no reason you have to, because all the nurseries now have an unbelievable amount of vegetables available for us to do. So I like seeds a lot. I do plant a few plants. So what do you prefer?
I have always been a transplant person until the last year, really. And again, because I give talks on growing stuff, I need to walk the walk. And so last season's tomatoes were all grown from seed for the very first time. It's just transplants. You have to get there right when the supplies are coming in into the nurseries. Otherwise, you can end up with not getting the varieties that you want.
Well, and then there's another thing. If they get root bound.
Yes.
So how do you check for that when you're going to buy one?
And again, so it's, you can always pull a plant out of its pot in the nursery, but you can usually just tell by the way it looks. With tomato plants, it's not going to be that big of an issue. And again, you just basically just pull it out and you unwind the roots. It's not that big of a deal. I haven't seen that much of a problem. If you come to your nursery and you see that it's pretty well picked over, some of those plants might have been there for a while. And so it's not something I would be overly concerned about, other than just is the plant healthy? Does it seem vigorous? Because you do want to get a plant that's not the wrong size for the pot. And so if the tomato plant looks 2 or 3 or 4 times bigger than the pot, you don't need to know anything else. That's probably not the tomato plant you want.
Right.
Go to another store that sells fresh tomato plants and just try to find something where the plants are smaller. If the plants are smaller, it's probably going to be fine.
And they bring them in all the time. I mean, they don't just bring one load of tomatoes in for the year. And
which is interesting you say that, because that's really what we forget about, is that you don't have to plant everything all at one time.
Right.
Other than if you're limited on space. But if you're not limited, if you have room to grow, you know, doing successive plantings of different things and getting different, whether transplants or seeds, doing them successively, then it'll extend your harvest season.
Yeah, yeah. And so I do that with lettuces and other things where, you know, you just put in successive, every week I plant more seeds, and then they all become good plants. So I can have them for a longer amount of time. So I have what I did is made a list of our early cold season vegetables that you can put in the ground now. Not everything can grow when it, the areas, when the weather is cool. And even like we have a rainy season, these plants that we're going to talk about first are going to be those that really like the cool weather and really like to have more water. They actually flourish in that. Like tomatoes really like sun and longer days. They're not so good to plant real early in the spring unless you're going to start them from seed. So the first one on here that is one of my favorite are peas. This is a great time to plant peas, and actually you can start them very early. I usually get seeds. You can find them all over. All the nurseries have them, and the big box stores have them out. They're all out there. They're just
easy
waiting
to plant.
Yep, they're easy to plant. They're nice and big. There's a couple of different types of peas. There's the sugar snaps, which are my favorite. You always wondered when I was really young, why can't we eat the pods on these things? And you couldn't, because they were just too fibery. But obviously somebody else had the same idea and said, and they developed sugar snap peas. And so now you can eat the whole pod and all the peas that are in it. And the first one that came out were sugar snaps, and now they have sugar ands and super sugar snaps.
I grew sugar daddy this year.
Yeah? And how did they do?
They did great. I was just really nice.
And you can just go out there and bring them in for dinner and just eat them fresh. They're really crunchy.
Gardener candy, I call it.
One of the many candies that we have out in the garden. So I usually, I do mine from, to me it doesn't make sense to get the plants, because they germinate so quickly, and the peas that are in they're not that big, because they're going to be vines, and so they don't want to have vines all growing over the place. So you're better off to just buy the peas and put them in the ground. And I usually use a nitrogen inoculant, and you can get that. You just roll them in water and then you put them in there. And peas will actually form nitrogen nodules on the roots, and you'll see them when you go to pull them up. And then I just leave the roots in the ground, because that is nitrogen that any other plant I put in there is going to pick up later, which is a kind of a cool thing. When I grow my regular peas, though, my favorite is an old-fashioned one. It's called Lincoln. So for those of you that want to shell your peas, that you really like fresh peas, Lincoln's will give you between 8 and 10 peas in a pod. And when you're growing them for just the shell peas, you don't want to have like 3. You're going to have to shell one at a time anyway.
That's the issue I've always had with peas and beans. It's just growing enough to get enough so that you get more than one meal out of it.
Yeah. And that's why I went for quantity, although they're very good. Fresh peas are delicious, and it's a special treat, because most people don't eat fresh peas, and especially because they didn't want to shell them. But I used to just sit there with the kids and we'd shell the peas and have them for dinner.
That's a fun thing. I did snow peas this year too, Oregon sugar pods.
Oh, really?
And again, these are more, both the snaps and the snow peas were more of an accent for me to add in with other vegetables and stuff that we were doing.
And the big difference between those is they're usually flat. You'll see those in Asian cooking a lot.
Right. So we did a little stir fry with that.
Yep, that's good. And then the sugar snaps, they're more puffy. They're more juicy and thicker. And those you can eat just as a plain vegetable with butters, of course. It's delicious. And then the next thing is lettuce, and there are all different kinds of lettuce, and we were just out in Chris's garden, and we were looking at his raised beds, and you had some romaine in there.
I did a number of different things. So I hedged my bets between seeds and transplants, and so I did a couple of small containers of seeds, and lettuce is one of the easiest vegetables that you can do from seed. And again, the only issue is the seeds are small, and just giving them cover, but not too much cover. And they will wash easily too. So if you get a gully wash or a rain event, that can be a bit of an issue. And I've been using the perlite. So just sprinkling the seed and putting a little perlite over it. And it's almost foolproof in terms of growing lettuce from seed. And what I did there is I did a blend of greens and red leaves. And I like to get different colors in there. I also did some bib from seed. For the transplants, I did romaine and I did butter leaf.
Yep, and I like butter crunch is my favorite one of all of them. And oak leaf, I like the red oak leaf because it really makes a pretty color in there.
And then I just harvest with scissors. It's interesting now, I notice in the nurseries, they have different kinds of lettuce almost year-round. And so the trick, I think, is that in the summer months, it's going to be too warm. And so you're going to have to pick shadier, cooler spots in your garden to do lettuce more than a cool, wet season crop here. If it's,
yep.
if it's really hot and sunny, it's going to want to bolt too quickly. It's going to want to go to a seed head, and it's going to be leathery, and it's not going to taste good. So that's kind of the trick there. But my goal is I haven't bought lettuce in 4 months. And
terrific.
I just love that. You know, just going out and harvesting lettuce for a salad.
Yeah.
And I know what I'm putting on it. I know what I'm not putting on it. So, you know, I'll lay some fertilizer down on all my vegetables into the soil when I plant transplants. And then for the edibles, like the lettuce crops, I don't do any fertilizing at all because I don't really want to add anything. And I don't really care if it's organic or non-organic.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is going to my mouth. I mean, this isn't like it's going to the soil under the tomato. I don't need to worry about it. This is actually going into my mouth.
So yeah, and it's great to go out there and just clip some off. And also, if you pull the whole plant out, that's it. But if you cut it off with a scissor, more lettuce will grow out of that plant.
And I can get reliably, I can get 3 cuttings off of a single plant, sometimes
perfect.
More, depending on how early or late I planted them.
Yeah, wow. And spinach, too. That is a really good, you can get the baby spinach, blooming, I think it's Bloomingdale Longstanding. I don't get it's a real, it's a tall one, and that one is a very long crop. It will grow into hotter weather, but I just grow the baby, and that's real easy to grow, and especially they'll even handle some snow, although we don't get it here. But I've had snow growing and coming down, and the spinach still grew through the snow. So that was, I love the spinach along with the lettuce too. I want to talk about bok choy, which isn't something that a lot of people eat, but is an all-American winner this year. This is something that if you have Chinese food, it's going to be there in the stir fry. It's going to be in most of the Chinese dishes that you're going to buy at the restaurant. And so I tried that this year, and I tried it from seed, and it's the name of the one that's the all-American winner this year is called pak choy.
Pak, P-O-C.
P-A-C. P-A-C. Pak choy. And they're baby ones. So they only get about 12 inches high. And so they're not the really big ones. And so mine are almost ready to pick and cook. And I'm going to give them a shot. But
that sounds like a perfect size for your stir fry.
Yes, yes. We have two
and
people.
You can put them in whole. You don't have to chop them up as much.
Yeah, I'm actually going to chop mine up and use the whole thing, the top part, which is green, and the bottom part, which almost looks like celery, but it's whitish. And so I'm going to give that, and just like, that's the fun part about gardening, is there's always something new out there that you can try. And if you go to the All-American Winner site, they have every year the winners of the vegetables, flowers, and now perennials that will grow everywhere in North America. And it's an all-American winner if it will grow in Maine and Florida and California, and it grows well in all three places. So you know that once it's an all-American winner, you can grow it anywhere. They do have regional winners, and we do have a whole program on that this year. If you're interested in it, you can go to our podcast on KUCI Radio in the garden section. And so we have the new ones this year. The program is up. I recorded it earlier this year, so I know all the new stuff for this year.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And radishes, of course, to go with the lettuce, they are extremely simple. They're small. It's just like the lettuce, the spinach, the radishes, and the carrots, beets, too, are all very small seed. And my trick is to put them in with sand. So not only do I separate the seeds, but I can also tell where it is. And you're using the perlite, and because then you can see where you planted them. And those come up really fast.
If you're direct seeding into the ground, I've heard some master gardeners recommend putting in radishes as kind of an indicator species to see whether or not your irrigation is right. Because radishes are probably the easiest seed to grow.
Yeah, and you can grow them in between your lettuce. So you've got a row of lettuce, a row of radishes. You pull your radishes up, and you can put in another row of lettuce if you want to, too. Another thing that we spring is a plant that we need to plant or should get in the ground, and especially early, are onions. And we are always talking about, do we want to do seeds? Do we want to do sets? What's the difference between
so
more?
So tell the listeners what a set is.
Okay, a set is actually a year's growth of seeds. So
they've been sprouted and grown.
Yep, and they come up in there, they're probably about... maybe 2 inches tall or 3 inches tall. You'll see them. They'll have them in groups of 25. They'll have a little rubber band around them. But they're all ready to go in the ground. And these are seeds that you're going to try to get bulbs out of. If you do it with seeds, it's going to take you that whole year or at least 6 months worth of growing before it's even going to set a bulb. So if you want to have bulbs that you're going to have for later on, summer into the fall. Matter of fact, ones I planted last year, I just finished up in December. So that was, it's not perfect, but because I didn't plant enough, but because I don't have any now. But I did put them in the ground this year in my set. So you use, because we are in Southern California, we want the long season onions. And that's the set you want to get. Do not get the short season. We have the wrong kind of sunlight day length for that. You need to put the long season in. So if you're going to buy sets, make sure you look for long season sets. And so this year I tried growing from seeds, the same ones that I bought the sets from. It's the same variety. So I could compare and what's the difference. And of course, the sets are far and away, even though I planted my seeds way in December and they're still growing fine, but they're not even the same size as the sets that I put in a month ago.
So can you do it? Yes. Is it worth doing?
Yeah. So that was my test. I wanted to see.
But again, now you know. I mean, that's kind of the cool thing is you can't.
Well, what's going to happen is then I'm actually going to have my onion set bulbs earlier.
You'll have your own sets then.
And then I'll have my sets, and then we'll get them. And they can actually grow all the way through the winter. So even if I put them out there in the fall, then I will have all of that cool, wet time for those to form into bulbs. So
that sounds great.
That might be the best way to do it. So I'm going to take a break right now just to remind everyone that this is KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. This is the In the Garden show, and we're here every Thursday from 8:30 to 9:30 in the morning to help everyone in Orange County be a better gardener. The opinions and views expressed in this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. And you can access our shows live, like you're listening to right now, hopefully, or maybe you're listening on the podcast, and you can go online to KUCI.org and go to archives, and then go to the In the Garden archives, and it will bring you to all the shows that we have, and we've got quite a few. We've been doing it for a long time. So this morning's show, we're talking with Chris Bonner. We're talking about how to put in your vegetables and what to put in for your spring gardening. And we've been getting almost all the way through our some of our big vegetables. We're going to start working on our tomatoes, which is one of the biggest areas that most people plant tomatoes. That's a pretty common vegetable for everybody to grow. But we've got a couple other things we want to talk about in I plant beets. I put those in the ground, and beets are a real unusual kind of vegetable to plant, because when you get the little roundy thing that looks like a seed, it's not just one seed.
It's, oh, really?
No, there's more than one seed in that little thing that you think is one seed.
Oh.
And that's why you have to...
Break it apart?
You put it in the ground. When it comes up, you have to pull out and only leave one.
Thin it.
Yeah, you have to thin it. And so everybody thinks, you put them all next to each other, and they say, you have to thin beets. Well, you have to thin beets, because you don't just get one that comes up in that spot. And I like Detroit Dark Red, which is really good. And also beet greens are very good, too. So you can have those in your salads. And that's another really cool, cool vegetable that we can have. And then carrots, of course. Now, carrots to me have always been a bane because I can never get them to come up. And I think it's just because I'm not patient enough.
Well, there's that. Baby carrots are good, but you don't want them to be microwaved.
Well, I want to pull them out and I want to eat them. And they're just, they took, because they do take a long time to germinate. And that's, I have
they
no
do.
Patience.
And that's my issue. I did carrots this year from seed. Again, trying one, try something new every year.
Uh-huh.
I did, it was called Circus Tricolor. And
oh.
So it has purple, orange, and white carrots in the same mix.
Oh, how
so
fun.
Kind of fun. And then I just did an orange rotilled a variety carrot, again a smaller one. I kind of like the smaller ones for snacking with a little, you know.
Okay, so what's your secret? You're just more patient, or
I did it, and it was like, is so. To me, the question is, you can grow anything. Is it worth it?
Uh huh.
And so, you know, like zucchini would be my classic example of it's not worth it because I've done compare even my baby zucchini to store bought zucchini. And I don't really taste a difference.
Mm-hmm.
So if I can't taste a difference, why use my precious vegetable garden space to grow something that's not really better? Tomatoes, lettuce, oh my gosh, lettuce from the garden is so soft and the texture and the taste is wonderful. But, and tomatoes, of course, and we'll talk more about those are better. But carrots, I think they were sweeter than what I get from the
yep.
store. But not so much that, oh my gosh, this is, you know, I've died and gone to heaven, tomato sweet. So I'm glad I did it. Will I do it again? Maybe it's just an overwinter crop. I'll put that into my rotation. But in general, I probably won't in the future.
Yeah. And actually, carrots are a great crop to plant in the fall and forget. Because they're going to be wet, they're going to be cool, they'll continue to grow, and those are the perfect conditions for carrots. And so that, you know, you can have them for Christmas. That'd be wonderful. But I had a problem with, I think it was a rat, and they were doing really well this year. I thought, oh, good, I'm going to have them. They're about, you know, 5 or 6 inches high. The tops are doing really well, and I thought, oh, this
and
is...
And you have to be patient, right? You're waiting. To
yeah,
be waiting.
Oh, you bet. I have been, and I've been really good. And I came out one morning, and all the tops were just sheared off.
Oh, that's disheartening, isn't it?
And, you know, I'm trying to... It can't be a rabbit. They were in raised beds. They were too high, and it has to be a rat. And, of course, we're in California, and that is an issue. And that's one of the things we're going to talk about. It was very frustrating, because then I started... I'm pulling them up, looking for the root, and I'm going, seeing this really skinny little nothing, not even orange yet, you know?
Oh.
So it's... But, you know, I won't give up on them, but I just got to figure out a way of making them work. But anyway, so while we're talking about that, we are going to talk about the different types of varmints that are out there, rabbits, birds, rats, and things that we can do to help us be better gardeners so that we don't have to share our garden or not as much of our garden as with these animals that are coming around that want to eat what we've got growing. So right now I have a problem with, I'm sure this mama rabbit had her babies in my yard because now I have little rabbits in my yard. And of course I've got it all blocked off so they can't get out of my yard because I didn't want them to get into the yard. So you've got some tricks that are working for you. So you want to share those, especially with the rabbits.
Yeah, so the rabbits... I have been able to fence off my backyard.
What did you use?
And so what I did is I used chicken wire, and they have green plastic coated chicken wire, so it doesn't look as ugly.
Uh-huh.
And I just stapled it to the bottoms of my gates.
Oh.
And there was a spot where they were jumping up through the wrought iron, and so I got some plastic mesh that I put up about 3 feet up so they couldn't jump over that. And again, I had a thing called my bunny stick, and so it was a bamboo pole. And you can't get rid of rabbits by yourself. You need a partner to do this, to herd the bunnies. So you open the gate, and you start at one end, and you pound the ground, and you basically chase the rabbits out. And then you just use different kinds of fencing materials to try to keep them out. And so the first thing is just try to create a, and it doesn't have to be your whole backyard, but try to create a zone that the rabbits can't get into to begin with, and then just keep them out of that.
Yeah.
And that's not easy. And again, it's just, so I do raised beds.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this all works well for the big mammals, the rabbits, but the small mammals, Mr. Ratatouille, not so much. Again,
they can get they up
can,
there.
They can get anywhere, basically. And you really can't, there's nothing mechanically you can do to defend against rats. I've tried different things. And for all the right reasons, I've ended up where I will do live traps and I will just plant more and just have sacrificial plants.
Yep. And I have used rat traps. One of the ways of doing it is putting them against the wall. You don't have to put any type of food in those traps. They actually will go across them. They think it's just something else and you don't even have to track them. Face them towards the wall and put them right at the wall because rats like to stay at places when they run. They don't like to run out in the open because they don't, they want to be able to only have to look one way when they're going. And so if you keep your rat traps facing into the wall, they'll go over it.
And then you'll get them.
You'll get them. And that's what I do. But, you know, you just can't get them all. They can climb up fences on, we have cinder block walls and they climb on the top of those at night. You can see them running across. They'll climb up trees. They'll climb up stucco. All kind different. They're very devious, and so they get into a lot of things. So I rat traps is what I've been using. I don't use any type of a killer because we have a lot of open areas, and we have hawks, and we have other animals that'll eat the rats. And if they've been poisoned, you'll be poisoning it all the way down the food chain.
And they say that virtually all mountain lions in California have rat poison in their blood.
Yeah,
and so it's not good.
Yeah,
so
you don't
really want that's. Mm-mm. It seems like that's the way to go, but that's the when you hire the pest company and they put the rat traps out with the poison. That's not really the way you want to go.
Yeah, I don't want to see them alive, so I make sure that they're dead when I get out there, and that's fine. I can throw them away. I can deal with that. But so then we also have birds. I have blueberries, and that they've been a bane to the blueberries because they love the blueberries, of course. And so
right.
I've been using netting to put around that. And I even tried using metal netting. I'm going with metal netting now to keep the rats out of. I'm going to try to do that with my carrots. And I've got the rabbits that are going after my onions. So I'm going to be having to make up a quarter inch metal enclosure so that I can stop them from eating those. I guess you got to do what you got to do,
yeah.
You know. But we also have slugs and snails, especially because we've had a big rainy season. And so there's a couple of things you can do. Do you have any special ways of dealing with?
I haven't had a problem lately. And again, a small amount, not enough where I'm getting enough damage that it's bothering me. And kind of since becoming a master gardener, I used to be, before master gardening, I was part of the general public, which would be in the spray and pray, right? You you don't know what the problem is, and you spray the heck out of it, and you're killing, you know, the 90% of insects and small animal life that's either benign, neutral, or beneficial. You kill all those, too. And so
yep.
I don't worry about not having perfection. You know, if I get to the point where it's killing, something's eating all my roses or it's eating all my vegetables, then you got to do something.
Yeah.
But basically just making it so that you take preemptive steps. And the key is just being out there on a regular basis so you can see when a problem is starting and it's a small problem, it's a whole lot easier to deal with. And so with the snails, I pick them and I throw them off into the open space
yep.
near my house.
Mine go into the street and let the crows get them.
Yeah, the crows love those.
Yeah.
If you have chickens, chickens love snails.
That's yeah. right, and the shells too. But there are a couple other things that you can use, diatomaceous earth, and that is actually like from the sea, and they're very prickly, and they won't go across them. They won't cross it. It just actually pierces their skin. And
that's the white stuff that
yep.
people add to their pool filters in swimming, but they have it at pool supply stores.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Yeah, it's real easy to get. You just make a little circle around your thing and they won't cross it. And then, of course, the beer traps, you can sink those into the ground, put a little beer in it, and they love the smell of that and they fall in. It's just a little dish, a little metal something. I use a little mint box and put that in the ground, put a little beer in it, and they die. They fall right in.
I just hate to give up my beer.
Well, you know, it's beer, snails, beer, snails. So... Okay. I have to make a choice.
It doesn't take much.
No.
And they don't seem to care about the quality of the beer.
No, that's right. Yeah. If you get some stale beer, that'll be perfect. That'll be fine. So now we're going to get to the fun part, the tomatoes. So you can start them from seed, of course, and you can put them in from plants. I've done them both ways, but I found that planting tomato seeds is so easy. You just got to start them early enough, but then maybe you can start them too early. So, Chris, tell me about your experiment this year.
So, I as part of the Speakers Bureau, I talk about tomatoes, and we've got this one guy, Brian Hamlin. He's Mr. Tomato, and he's grown tens of thousands of tomato plants for plant sales and everything. I'll never be Brian, but I did want to have the experience. I've always been transplants, and I wanted to try growing tomatoes from seed, and I did it last year, and I was late. And so the general rule that Brian teaches, and I think it's a good one, is seeds by Valentine's Day, transplants by tax day.
Oh.
Okay, so get your seeds started by Valentine's Day and get your transplants into the ground, so big enough to go into the ground, by April 15th, and you're fine. And again, you can go earlier or later in Orange County because we do have such a mild climate.
Mm-hmm.
The magic number is 50 degrees nighttime temperature. And so tomatoes aren't happy if the nighttime temperature is below 50 degrees. And so where I live in Mission Viejo, there are the winter months, December, January, February, are too cold at night for there to be active growth. And the problem is it won't kill the plant. It's not like we get freezes here, but they won't grow. So
right.
Basically, they'll just stay the same size. And if plants aren't actively growing, bad stuff can happen to them in terms of different kinds of other kinds of diseases and things. And so this year, I thought, oh, that was, and I grew an incredible crop. I got this, my first tomato was a Berkeley pink tie-dye heirloom tomato. That's this combination of green and red colors and multi-ridged, and oh my gosh, it was to die for. I was worried about the rats getting it, but they didn't, and I got it first, and it was an incredible Caprese salad. And so I thought, oh, I'll do it again this year, and I'll just start early, and I can give free tomato plants away at the classes that I teach. And what I discovered is I started too early. I started in January, and I could sprout them. I got a heating pad. You can buy inexpensive heating pads, and they basically keep your seed starting pots at 72 degrees, which is perfect. But then they were keeling over and dying, and what I discovered was the sun was so low in the horizon that my south-facing window, my neighbor's house, was blocking the sun, and I wasn't getting enough sun in the day. And so I actually killed two crops of seeds.
So
but you learn by making mistakes.
That's right. That's
now
right.
The third crop, it's going gangbusters, and so I'll get my free tomato plants to my Murray classes here in the coming months. It'll just be a little later than I thought. So seeds aren't easy. I like to, and what we were taught as master gardeners, is to grow a lot of seeds in basically in a cup, a 4-inch pot or a cup with holes in the bottom and covering with perlite, and getting them to the first round leaves, which are the cotyledons, and the first true leaves, which have the serrated, the rough edges on them. Once you get the first to the second set of leaves, so it's got four leaves on it, then you transplant it to a 4-inch pot and grow it up to about the size of what you would buy from a nursery, and then you put it into the ground. And you let it set out for a week or so so that it gets used to the cold. So it can go into temperature shock, and so you do have to watch that if you're going from inside growing seeds to outside. of putting it out during the day, maybe bringing it in at night, and then getting it to the point where it's okay, and then you can put it into the ground. So,
yeah, and they call it hardening off, if you hear that. I need to harden off my plants. That means that you've got them in a warmer situation. You want them to be able to grow outside, but you just can't throw them out there and say, okay, well, now grow. You really have to do it. It doesn't take long, you know, a couple of days, putting them out and then bringing them in and putting them back out during the day.
And so if you remember, a tomato plant is a hot season crop, not a sort of getting warm crop. Okay, and so can I plant tomatoes in the middle of March? Absolutely. How will they do? They'll probably do fine, but just remember, a lot of the tomatoes, and you look on, and we'll talk more about the different types of tomatoes, but if you look on the label, if you buy a transplant or on the seed pack, it'll tell you how long to maturity, and it's, yeah, let's look at a seed pack here. What does this one say? This is a beefsteak tomato, and it's telling me 80 days to harvest. So that's 80 days from planting the seed to harvest. So basically, let's just round it off 3 months. So if I plant it in March, April, May, June, the first tomatoes are going to start happening in June, and that is when we start to get our heat, so that's a good thing. If I go earlier, the plant's going to peak too early. I'm not going to have that heat.
Mm-hmm.
And so can I get tomatoes? Yes. I overwinter tomatoes. Tomatoes are a herbaceous perennial. You actually can you can prune back and overwinter winter tomatoes. But the problem is in those winter months, the tomato plants take longer to grow. They take much longer to ripen. And without the heat, you just don't get the same sugar production you get as you do during the summer. So,
and they do have winter varieties that you can get. And I actually did grow some this year. They did grow way slower. I was hoping to have some for Christmas. And I did have them in I put them in pots, big pots. We went away for 1 week and the rats got them. They were just about ready and the rats got them. So I didn't even get to taste them. It was kind of manic.
Those tomatoes that do well in the cooler environments, if you're really close to the coast and you have fog,
mm-hmm.
then the cooler varieties are going to, even grown as a summer, even if they say they're a winter tomato, you can grow those as a summer tomato close to the coast where you've got the cooling effect of the fog. If you try to grow something that needs a lot of heat in an inland situation close to the coast, you're just not going to get the temperature. You're not going to get it. You have a very mild temperature. I just taught a tomato class in San Juan Capistrano, and I looked at their temperatures. You can grow, it never gets, the lows never get below 50 because it's so temperate right on the water like they are.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, they don't get the kind of heat that I get here in Mission Viejo or Fullerton or Yorba Linda or Anaheim where you get the blazing hot suns.
Yep.
We have the opposite problem here. In the middle of the summer, when you get a heat spell, you actually need to be thinking about shade cloth because you will sunburn your leaves, you'll sunburn your fruit.
Yeah, and I live in San Clemente, so we are up on a hill. I do get a lot of marine layer, and I have to grow mine next to I have a cinder block wall. It's a white cinder to get the heat.
That's like a thermal sink that stores the heat.
Yeah, so you have to.
That's a great tip.
What, you know, use what you have, you know, and then I also have a shady side of the house, so I can put my lettuce over on the other side of the house in the summertime.
And I had the opposite, where I put tomatoes once against the same stucco wall that was west facing, and it cooked it.
Yeah.
Because if you're in too hot of a situation, it can go the opposite way. And basically, tomatoes will start to have major problems when there's consistent heat above 95 degrees.
Yeah.
And just the set fruit, it gets different bottom rot and some different things. And just physically, you can't keep the plant wet enough. The ground can be moist and you can still cook the plant.
Yeah. It just pulls out too much of the juices in the plant. It just starts to dry up. So we need to move along. So we are really, we're going to have to talk about this on another show too, because we've really got a lot to cover. But I want to talk about the two different kinds of tomatoes, the determinate and indeterminate, and why you would want to grow one over another one.
So determinate, indeterminate, a less scientific way to describe those would be bush and vine. And so the determinate bush varieties, they grow, and generally the the flowers and the fruit all sets at once and you get one crop. Classically, you don't need to cage, you don't need to put metal support on these, but I recommend it just because if we get a Santa Ana condition and your tomato plant has fruit on it, there's so much heat. I've had tomato plants that just basically just they fell over and now I can't get them back up.
And I've
damaged the stems. And so the determinants, these are your patio or your container types.
Mm-hmm.
And one is called patio as a variety. And these are really wonderful for containers in small spaces. We recommend them for first-time gardeners because they're so darn easy and you are going to get a crop out of them. As you get into it, the indeterminate or the vine types, as the name indicates, it actually will flower and set fruit over the whole growing season. And so you'll get a longer growth season out of it. Because they're a vine, though, you put them in a tomato cage or some sort of structure, and it can be a homemade structure out of different kinds of wire meshing or fencing.
Mm-hmm.
You can use a string method where you have a wood frame and you have strings and they climb up the strings. You can go reverse. For a while, they were selling tomatoes in a hanging pot, and the tomatoes grow down.
Yep, I've seen that. I didn't have a great success with that.
And again, the issue there is you don't have much soil.
Right.
And so you really have to stay on top of the hydration, the water. Otherwise, mm-hmm. it's going to dry out. And you do have to feed container tomatoes more because you don't have as much soil to draw from to get the nutrition that they want to get. And mm-hmm. so determinate, indeterminate, again, I try to mix it up both on the seeds and the transplants, the determinate, the indeterminate, the bush and the vine types, just to have some different types. So if I have a problem with one, I'm not going to come up empty-handed on my tomatoes.
And there's actually a catalog just totally tomatoes. It's the whole catalog is tomatoes. There are so many. And especially now we have the heirloom tomatoes are getting more and more popular. And they're going, oh, we didn't even know that we had, you know, those were out there. When you're looking at seed packets, it will also tell you, and on the store, on the labels, look, and it will tell you if it's a determinate or indeterminate tomato. Right on the package and right on the label, so you'll be able to know what you're getting. And I do plant a lot of indeterminate because I want to have, you know, is the longest season of tomatoes that I can have. And I put mine in cages. I have really big cages, and there's a lot of different ways of growing them. You can nip off the new side growths if you want and have more of your tomatoes growing up on the center stem, or you can just let them go. And we used to just let them grow all over the ground, but of course, when you've got your tomato on the ground, then it can rot, and you don't want that to happen. So I prefer cages, and it just because it's cleaner.
My cages are 30 years old. I've grown. I'd like to say when I give my tomato talks, my intro is that I have hand harvested 14 tons of tomatoes.
You've done better than I have.
Well, it's a little bit of a cheat because I have personally grown in my garden 2 tons of tomatoes.
Oh my!
But you know, I grow 18 plants because some of my plants are going to get diseased and not do well, mm-hmm. and critters are going to eat some of them, mm-hmm. and I still want to have some, and I want my family, my friends, and my neighbors, and the people that come to do stuff in the house, I give everybody tomatoes, and
yeah.
they're happy. They think I'm a great guy, so I grow lots of tomatoes. I did tomato research at UC Davis, and it was part of a field trial for canning tomatoes, ketchup and soup and pasta and uh-huh. pasta sauce, and it was ethylene, a natural ripening hormone, and they spray different concentrations to try to turn fields of tomatoes ripen at the same time to increase the price they would get for the tomatoes.
Oh.
Because it's based on the amount of red solids that are in it. And so I harvested 12 of my tons were, of my 14 tons were, oh. hand, were part of this tomato trials.
Oh.
But, I still picked 12 tons of tomatoes in a 2-week period.
I'm thinking you did this in your backyard, and
there's no way that happened. It was university research.
Okay. Well, we need to get into the different classifications of tomatoes because there are a lot of different kinds, and we'll just go briefly over some of these. One of the kinds of tomatoes called grape tomato, and you can see them. They're usually very small and oval shaped. Just look kind of like a grape. And their characteristics are they're crisp and crunchy and meaty. And I've seen a lot of grape tomatoes out there. They're really great in salads. It's a great kind that it's one of those fruit candies that you can go out there. And
you see those in the grocery stores a lot now. The grape tomatoes are really popular in the plastic containers at the grocery stores.
Yep. And I'm not sure where the pear tomatoes come in, but I know they're one of the small ones. And I love the pear tomatoes because they are one of the sweetest tomatoes out there. And I love the yellow ones, but they come in all different colors now.
They do.
Yeah.
Orange, red, pink.
Yep. What a gorgeous salad that will make.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Now, one of the favorite, and this the one you grew last year, was a beefsteak. And these are the big old ones that we remember as kids. They're large, they're firm, they're meaty, they have real rich color on them. And you've got a secret for making great bacon, lettuce, and tomato sandwiches with beefsteaks. So
I always grow tomatoes of different sizes and hybrids versus heirlooms. We'll talk about why you do hybrids or heirlooms, but the beefsteak, and that is a specific name of a large tomato, but it's also kind of a class. So I make a big deal out of making sure I've got some large tomatoes that are sandwich size. And what I like to do is it's a ceremony. So the first large tomato of the year, I've been watching this, making sure I wait till it's peak ripeness. We get the whole BLT process going. We've cooked up the bacon and it's all set to go. We've got the lettuce and everything's all set. And then the ceremony is I go out and I harvest a tomato. And I only take the center three slices. And my rule is the slice has to be big enough so that one slice covers a whole slice of bread.
Of course.
And so, because it just stays on that way better.
Yeah.
And it might be a little warm, and that's okay. Typically, we say, you know, you want to, it doesn't really matter what time of the day you harvest it, but if you harvest it in the morning before it gets that heat, it's probably a little more palatable. If it's a little cooler, you never want to refrigerate a tomato. Mm-mm. Because that'll kill the nose, that'll kill the flavor of the tomato, even if it's homegrown. If you refrigerate your tomato, it's toast. You harvest it, leave it on the counter. But I would harvest it just in time to slice and put on the sandwich. And,
oh my perfect. Gosh. Perfect.
That first bite of that BLT. Oh my gosh.
I know. I'm already jealous. I'm hungry now already. So we also have grape tomatoes and beef steaks. Then they also have green beef steaks, which are tart and tangy. And you can make pie out of it. I was really surprised that I did see a recipe for green tomato pie, and it had raisins in it, and I haven't tried it yet, but I thought that would be an interesting thing, because, fried green tomatoes, that's got to be good, too.
That is good.
Yeah. And then there are cherry tomatoes. This has been around a long time. They're usually round, about an inch to an inch and a half. They're real snappy. They have a medium skin. They're sweet and juicy, and those you can just pop in your mouth.
If you're limited on doing tomatoes, I do recommend doing cherries. So scientifically, the smaller the tomato, the higher the sugar content.
Oh,
and
no wonder.
So I grow three types of cherries every year. Sweet 100s, my reds, and I love those. Mm-hmm. Sun Golds, which is an heirloom orange.
Yes.
And then a yellow pear, which is also a cherry size, pear-shaped yellow, also an heirloom. And the three colors, together with cucumber and a little fresh dill and maybe some vinaigrette on top of that.
It's awesome.
Balsamic vinaigrette. That is, and I will eat these cherries while I'm going back and forth.
Of course.
As a reward for my hard work in the garden.
And then one of the great ones out there are Romas. Now these are great for sauce because they don't have very many seeds in them. They're firm, they're very dense, but they're perfect for the lunchbox because they're not juicy. They don't have a bunch of juice. They're easy to eat. They don't drip all over the place, and they're just, you know, hand size. But when you're making something that you want to make like your tomato sauces with, or even you can make actually tomato jam, then you would use these because there's not a whole bunch of liquid in these.
And the sugar content of these types of tomatoes, whether it's in a sauce or a jam, I mean, it's going to be a much sweeter sauce than you'll ever get from the store.
Oh, well, any time. And now your favorite heirlooms, and we've got to just about wind this up with our heirloom tomatoes. So you were talking about, what was that one again? The name?
Berkeley pink tie-dye. And so there's a Berkeley green tie-dye and a Berkeley pink tie-dye, and I grew both last year. And with a green tomato, it gets ripe and it still looks green, which is a little odd. But both were wonderful, and the pink tie-dye was just great.
Oh, that's terrific. Well, we got to wind the show up. We're just about done, and I want to thank Chris for coming in. And remember, everyone, we can listen to our shows on a podcast, and we'll see you again in the garden.